from LPM.
Louisville Public Media.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
Hi, I'm Kyla.
And this is Jay.
And you're listening to Strange Fruit Podcast.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to Strange Fruit at Home. You know, I think I told y'all last week, that's what Wendy Williams calls her show, Wendy Williams at Home, and like, Kelly Clarkson at Home, so we're going to be Strange Fruit at Home. Even though I guess podcasts are technically always at home, as it could be, yeah.
I think a lot of podcasts are at home. I think a lot of folks...
I don't mean like hosting at home, but like people usually listen at home, but some people listen like on the train, but wherever y'all listening from, we're hosting from home. You doing okay, Doc?
I am. I've been doing well. I'm not really getting the cabin fever effect because I walked Denver and my dog so much. And so I've been able to get the fresh air and it's been really nice weather these past couple of days. And so,
You're a homebody anyway. You prefer, like, if you had your druthers, you would be home with your wife and your parents and your dog baby. I, on the other hand, it must so like, I child, you know, I'm going stir crazy.
I know, but I was just thinking about the thing I do miss is I miss getting pretty and putting on makeup and having fancy hair. Like, I just put up this meme today that basically is like 5 minutes before I log in on my Zoom meetings, because I've had so many meetings and all these thesis defenses and stuff like that. And I've been like, I'm going to get pretty every time. And it's like, yeah, no, not so much. I haven't put on a titch of makeup in, I'd say, a solid month. My skin is fabulous, right? But it doesn't, it's not giving me the same type of fulfillment when I, you know, get all
done up. But you know what I love about you is that, well, first of all, I mean, let's just keep it real. You're pretty regardless, child. You're pretty even outside of your makeup. Okay, but you know what I love about, I think this is a luxury that women have that men don't have. So, like, you know, just like that whole, they have that whole don't rush challenge where people are on, like, the video and they look like bummy. Then they come back and they look, like, really fabulous. So women, it's so you have your glasses on, no makeup on, and you're pretty, but then you get done up, it's like a really, like, a transformation. And dudes, all dudes can really do is, like, get a haircut and, like, put on, like, a suit. Like, and we still look, it's like, okay, Jason, you just got a haircut. But women, like, y'all for real be looking like, you know.
It'd be the transformation effect. It does.
But nonetheless, you know, I've been missing you. We haven't seen each other in a while. Although we used to see each other all the time. But I will see you soon. But hey, let's get into today's conversation, Doc, because I'm super excited. This conversation is one that I can relate to. But I think back about my childhood. And I think about I wait tables for a living and the interactions I have with particular guests and their coded language and what they're really getting at when they ask certain questions. So the essay I saw is called The Confusion of Being Black, But Told, quote, You Talk Like a White Boy. So to help us break down this conversation, please welcome the author of that essay. He's a sketch comedian, a cover singer, and a writer in love with storytelling. Welcome, writer Brandon Anderson, to the show.
Brandon, how are you? Thank you so much. I am so happy to be here. It is fantastic. This is like a dream come true. Like, I never thought I'd be like on a podcast talking about some literary works. I feel like I should have a sweater on. There should be a cup of tea, but all I got is water and y'all. This is great.
I love it. I love it. Well, that's awesome. the most important question, you describe yourself as a cover singer. What is your go-to? This is a very important question. But this decides if we're going to keep you on the show or we're going to go ahead and ditch you. No. What is your favorite go-to cover song?
Woo, man. Bill Withers, Use Me Up every time.
Oh,
every
my goodness.
Time.
Right on.
Every
right.
time.
Well, we're quite the karaoke singers. Kyla's a better vocalist than I am.
No, that's not the case. I usually be having whiskey in my cigarettes and feeling like I'm really singing, and Jay's always making fun of me on the low, so no.
But I love it. But Brandon, it's a delight to have you, man, and I can totally relate to the piece that you wrote. And I'm going to ask you to talk about what led you to write it, but I can relate to both as, like, what happens to us as young people. I was a black boy growing up in the 80s and 90s, In the heyday of Carlton Banks on Fresh Prince and all those kinds of things, and I related to that. But then also as an adult, in the ways in which, you know, we kind of still hear those things about talking like a white boy. But so you describe yourself as being 60 years old, and you had a particular job. And at this job, you had an experience with a customer that kind of frames this conversation. Tell us where you worked, you know, what life was like for you at that time, and what was this conversation that opened up this larger discussion for you?
Well, let's see. I mean, I was 16 at the time, and I was working at a video store, which was the job to have in the 90s. I mean, it was fantastic. I mean, I wasn't flipping burgers. I was selling videos. I had a polo. I was looking great. And I think that for me at that time, I was feeling like a normal 16-year-old kid would. You know, I was surrounded by friends who were like me in so many ways, that feeling awkward about the way that I spoke wasn't really on my radar, you know, because of the people I went to surround myself with. But now, when I had this interaction with this guy, like, he walks in and, you know, I'm busy taking new customers, or that's my job, to take new customers. And he walks in and I'm talking to him about some stuff, and he just starts looking at me. You know, it's kind of one of them old school, kind of older guys, you know, like he's somebody's cool uncle, you know, and he's just looking at me and he's about to say something. I'm waiting for him to talk. And he says, "Man, why you sound so white? Why you talk like a white boy?" And it was such a jarring experience for me, because it made me feel like I was wrong for being who I was. You know, I think that it felt like he was accusing me of trying to be something that I wasn't. And I think when you're young and you're trying to struggle with your own identity, you're trying to struggle with what type of person you're going to grow up to be, you know, for someone to say what you are not at your base level is just so moving, you know. And I think it affected me in ways that just permeated through my entire life. So
In your piece, you also talk about how this wasn't the first time, right? That this older gentleman in the store wasn't the first time that you encountered somebody telling you that you talk white. You said that Black kids did it, and even some bold white ones did it. Talk to us about how those two interactions were different. How did the bold white kids assert, "Hey, you talk white," versus the Black kids you encountered and their assertion of you talking white?
Well, for both of them, I mean, it was to be around my own people and hear that, it was always with this bit of disdain, you know. It was always like, why are you not happy with what you are and who you are? You know, why are you trying to sound like somebody that isn't you, that isn't where you come from? And then for white people, like, it was more so the phrase of, "You are the whitest Black dude I know," which is always, which was such a jacked up thing to hear as a kid, you know, especially when you are encouraged as an intelligent young kid to try new things, to learn, you know, in different ways and expand your mind when you have a natural ability for learning and for growth. You know, I'm sure I'm not the only one here who's been in a gifted and talented program or is in a special reading group for kids who were accelerated, you know, and with that comes new experiences and meeting new people, and you're immersed in different cultures and around different people. And I think that the way I speak and the way I was just a reflection of me being exposed to new things, you know. I kind of felt like I was being an advocate or I don't know, a kind of emissary for my people, going out there and being proud, you know, being Black, but making waves, making differences, doing new things. But to hear that from both of those people, from both sides, it made me feel like I didn't belong somewhere, you know. It felt like I was too Black to be white and too white to be Black, you know.
Absolutely, and as I mentioned, I went to Catholic school most of my life. I didn't even learn to cuss until I was like in seventh grade. Like, you know, I was considered the choir boy, but I oftentimes got like, "Why you talk so white?" And because I spoke improper with proper diction, or I conjugated my subject and my verbs and all those things that my mother thought were investments towards creating I thought I was doing things right. And so my question for you, Brandon, and I'm sure, and so, oh, let me also say, so I said as an adult, I wait tables. And so it is different when you hear from white people. They ask you things like, "Oh, where are you from? Like, you don't sound like you're from here." You know what I'm like? I know what you're getting at. Like, I do. I'm born and raised in Kentucky. You know, what you're getting at is, why do you speak so well? Right? Or, and so what's also very interesting is, when I would catch cabs all the time, I would have continental African cab drivers. And I would always say, "Yes, sir," "No, sir," or "Please and thank you." And I would speak with proper diction. And those cab drivers would ask me, "Are your parents African?" And at first, I didn't know what they were getting at. They're like, "Well, you know, where are your people from?" And I would say, "You know, they would say, like, man, you can't be Black American. Black Americans don't talk like you. Black
right.
even among continental Africans, there was still this idea of what it meant to be a Black American and how you should or shouldn't talk. And because I spoke with proper diction, or because I was even polite, that to them meant that my parents had to also be, you know, from the continent or from the Caribbean, because those are the kind of Black parents that rear children like us. But I want to ask you, Brandon, when you hear these things, especially from other Black people, did you have a sense of self-interrogation? How did it make you feel? Like, I felt myself asking, like, what could I have done to be more Black, right? And I tried to, I tried to posture, I tried to curse, and didn't do it right. But what did you feel, and what was your own interrogation? Did you ever try to find ways to act more Black, for lack of a better term?
Yeah, talk less in new situations. Talk less as possible. Be sure to say yeah, not yes. Be sure to say, oh, for real? Or instead of, oh, I know what you're talking about. Or whatever the case, you know? It's about, we were code switching before it was a thing, you know, before people had a name for it. It was about what you had to do when you were around your people, or what you did when you weren't around them. And as you got older, as I got older, when you start to analyze it and you think on it, what we're really saying is that we expect Black people to not use English properly. Like, we expect Black people to not speak the way a white person would, or way anybody who happened to have access to education and to good parenting or whatever should speak. And when you think about it, it's just racism wrapped up in racism and classism. And it says that we are only supposed to be one thing intellectually. And that's what I've come to realize, that it's more of a self-hating kind of thing.
Yeah. That's what I was going to ask you about, was that, you know, your idea of where this comes from. Cause I mean, I also, like you both, got that when I was a little kid, from not so much from my white peers, but definitely from the Black kids in my neighborhood. They would always be like, you know, are you biracial? Or I mean, I don't look, nobody's biracial child, but they would ask me hints of like ancestry and DNA and right, trying to figure out why I like certain things, why I like certain movies, why I could name certain actors and actresses in movies. Even it went so far as to the subject matters that I wanted to talk about with my peers. It wasn't just the intonation of my voice or the use of slang. It was also about my interests, like the things that I was interested in or not interested in, the things I could bond with them on and couldn't bond with them on. And you said just now that you feel like this speaks of racism, also classism. What can we tell young Black kids, right, who are being raised to use proper diction, etiquette, so on and so forth? What advice do you have for them to combat folks telling them, you talk so white, or you're the whitest Black person I know? What can they do, right, to kind of not have this produce anxiety or low self-esteem in them? Like, what would be a good clap back or a good response that they could have?
Wow. You know, I've always dreamed about being back in that situation and thinking about what would I have said. And maybe I would have said to them, like, what does that mean to you? What does that mean? Because you have to say it, because then you have to engage somebody in a conversation. What does that mean to you? What do you mean I talk white? What do you mean? What do you mean? And then that's when you have to approach it face on. You have to approach it head on. You say, if you were to ask somebody, what does that mean? It says, well, you use this word and not that word. It said, what do you mean? I'm not allowed to use this word, or you can't. And then you say, no, white people talk like this, or Black people do this. And I think that if you open up that dialogue, people will be able to understand what they're putting out, which is really just ignorance. It's really just a short-sightedness. Now, you know, easier said than done, because you know how kids can be. But I guess if I was able to give some kind of advice, if people were able to be courageous enough to do that, I think that's the only way. It's a brave step, but I think it's a way to at least get people to think about how they speak and think about what comes out their mouth before they say something.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a really, really actually great response, because I do think a lot of the action, a lot of our responses are things that we just don't think about, right? We hear other people, and then we parrot them.
Not to mention that the internet allows you to be so offensive, and so you can pop off so quickly because you're not even looking at somebody face to face then. So I can only imagine, you know, what's it like to be a young kid, you know, a young adolescent in this age where people can just give you that without even a thought to what you might feel or say or look like about it too. So
yeah So obviously, Brandon, you and I are a particular generation. I mean, you referenced in your piece, you know, Carlton Banks, Alfonso Ribeiro, and that was kind of like, that was the cliche kind of person that a phrase like Oreo or even right. like Steve Urkel. I wonder if you think, here we are, you know, these many years later, do you think that representations and images of Black boyhood and to some degree Black manhood have evolved? That is to say, you think about T.I., and yeah, it's kind of tongue in cheek, but T.I. speaks very well, right? He even is kind right. of known for, oh, you know, back in the day, you had to live in color. You had the Black don't live in color was pontificating about the education, you know. But T.I. right. is very that, right? But he speaks it. He speaks, you know, for in good diction, and he uses the proper conjugation. But I'm asking you, do you think that like there's more room now for Black boys and Black men to be more like we were without that being read as acting white? You know, like now they have like blurred culture, right? So it's what we might have been for some
right.
as right. gay, white is now, okay, you can be a blurred, right? You can be a blurred, and that's cool. So do you think there's more room now for young people than there was for us?
I think so. I think there is. But I think that being a young person is all about class structure. You know, it's always about finding a box to fit in. And it may not be the same boxes that were like ours growing up, but then even with all of this inclusiveness, there still comes just this instinctual nature with young folks to ostracize one another, you know? So I do think that it's different for young Black men, but I don't think, I just think the challenges are different, you know? They may not be facing it in the same way. Because growing up is always just a battle about finding out who you are. And when it at the end of the day, it comes down to the individual, and that you have to decide, are you going to let your actions and your experiences define who you are? Or are you going to let people tell you who you are? You know, so
I love it. At the end of your piece, you say that as you've gotten older, you're much less offended by those questions from Black people because you recognize from where those questions come, and you realize it's not Black people's fault that we have been raised in an anti-Black society, right? But what you have come to realize, and kind of what you held against that grown-ass man in that video store was like that was a power dynamic, of course. And so even as a young person, even if you were self-assured, there was that power dynamic, and that kind of grown-ass man had no right to kind of interrogate you. So you've come to realize the importance of words, and that words can have an impact in ways that you never understood. No, granted, right. that old dude didn't mean any harm, right? He didn't necessarily even want to insult you, but you held on to that, and so that's helped you realize the impact of words. Talk a bit more about that notion of you choosing your words wisely because you recognize the impact even beyond how you may intend them.
Well, I think like finding the courage, and I think the idea to get this story on paper. And get it out there. It's just really sparked a new avenue to explore as an artist and as a writer for me, because I think that there are so many points, so many memories that we hold on to in our lives that, you know, that they're just flashes to the people that were in them for us. But for us, I think we can kind of pinpoint certain moments and certain conversations in our life that made us who we are today. So like these big moments, I think sometimes. And I think that as I grow as a writer, I'm learning that every word for young people has meaning. Every word that you hear in your growth has meaning. And so for me, when I'm, as I get into being a real grown up, being like a real grown up, I'm understanding that I have an opportunity to share wisdom. I have an opportunity to share experiences. And it's important for me to be open to hearing other people's experiences so that I can find a way to translate wisdom to each other. So I think that I'm learning how to choose words so that I can be heard effectively.
Well, amen. Well, you certainly imparted some wisdom to us, and you've been heard on this show. Listeners, our guest today has been Brandon Anderson. He described himself as a writer, an actor, and a rock star. Hey, Brandon, thanks so much for making time for us today. We really enjoyed having you. Come back anytime, and we wish you the best of luck, okay?
Thank you so much. This has been an absolute pleasure. Y'all be safe, be healthy, and I hope to see y'all soon.
Take care, my friend. Bye-bye.
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 All right, Doc, let's take a quick break. Tell the people who we are.
You're listening to Strange Fruit Podcast.
The work we do on Strange Fruit wouldn't be possible without your support. If we've made you laugh
or made you think,
we hope you'll consider chipping in.
Visit donate.strangefruitpod.org.
That's donate.strangefruitpod.org. Thank you.
Welcome back. You're listening to Strange Fruit Podcast.
So, Doc, there's a couple of things making headlines this week that caught my eye. So over in Kentucky, you know, like everybody's dealing with the coronavirus. It's not just us here in Kentucky. It's not just folks in the U.S. It's really something that's happening all over the world. But every country is handling it differently. So let's talk about Kenya. The governor of Kenya has put together a care package for his citizens to help them deal with the coronavirus. So I'm sure it includes things like food, hand sanitizer, but he also has a very, very special ingredient in these care packages. Any idea what it is?
Oh my God, what is it?
It's a bottle of Hennessy.
A bottle of Hennessy.
I shit you not. A bottle of Hennessy. And Hennessy, I think Hennessy is like a, is it a brandy or is it a cognac or is it a bourbon or something? It's brown liquor. You know, I'm classy. You know, I do white wine. I do vodka. But you're a brown girl. So you probably had your fair share of Hennessy in your day. But Hennessy, of course, is brown liquor popular among Black people. And so the governor of Kenya has put together this coronavirus plan that includes Hennessy, but there's a very logical reason, Doc, behind the Hennessy. You ready to hear it? No, because, yeah, at first you're like, what, child, you're like, child, why would you put bottles of liquor in a care package? But interestingly enough, over here in the States, in Kentucky at least, liquor stores have been declared essential businesses. So you could go down that line of thinking. The liquor stores are essential businesses because during this time of quarantine, folks who are addicted to alcohol, that they really would have life-threatening consequences if they had to go through a forced withdrawal. So that's why the governor here, much like probably other governors, have declared liquor stores essential businesses. So I know a lot of people are like, well, why would you close the churches but leave the liquor stores open? But there really is a logical health reason behind it. But over in Kenya, though, he says the research has been conducted, which reveals that alcohol plays a very major role in killing the coronavirus. So that includes the alcohol in hand sanitizers, but also alcohol in liquor. Because if you think about it, Doc, if you think about like old Western videos, somebody gets shot or somebody gets stabbed, what do? They pour whiskey on the wound, right?
Oh, so like an antiseptic. It's functional.
Exactly.
Okay, yes. I got you. Yes.
Yeah, now, yeah, so Hennessy is a cognac. It only has an alcohol content of 40%, which really technically is not strong enough to kill viruses, so let's clear up that misnomer. You really need an alcohol content of at least 70%. That's what hand sanitizer has. That's what sprays and wipes have. So Hennessy, like cognac, it's rather cognacs like Hennessy and such, only have an alcohol content of about 40%. So it's really not strong enough to kill the viruses. And then also, you know, drinking alcohol can also weaken your immune system if you do it in excess. So the governor was along the right lines, but really is like, no, just say y'all want to get drunk. That's okay. Because a lot of people are doing what you have to do to get through these times. For some people, that includes the bottle. For some people, that includes the smoke out. You know, everybody got what they do. For me, that's like shopping at the grocery and cooking all the time.
I love it, though. I love that he put that in there, though. That is like
bottles of Hennessy. Well, there's another city also making headlines. This is in New Orleans. It's actually a Colorado woman who's facing a host of charges because she rode up in the New Orleans airport butt-ass naked. Her name is Mario Vergara. She's 27 years old. She walked into Louis Armstrong Airport there in New Orleans, and she went to the Spirit Airlines ticket counter, and she was completely nude. And she, wanted to purchase a ticket and get on her flight. Well, of course, they called the authorities because the woman would not leave the premises. But by the time the cops got there, she had put on a very short dress, but it was not enough to cover up her goodies. You know, they asked her to leave. She would not leave. And she also was not allowed to fly because the dress she had on, it was reported by the airport personnel that it, quote, did not cover her genitals. And she did not have on underwear. As I always say, I don't make things, I just report it. So she refused to leave. She was arrested and charged with a number of misdemeanor offenses. But my thing is, like, airports, to me, airplane seats are nasty. So even if you do want a free ball or go commando, whatever, why would you want your bear, on the seat to fly with no drawers on and no pants for that matter?
What did the woman say? Like, did anybody interview her and say, like, why are you butt naked? Like,
not so far, but probably because she probably was frustrated with what it takes to get through security. Because let me tell you something, I've been tempted my daggone self. So I'm putting that butt naked because I'm serious. Because you got to take off your shoes. Then you got to take off your belt. You got to take off your jacket. You got a jacket on.
You got to empty your pockets. Take off a hat.
You got to put your liquids in this bag. Your laptop in that bag. You gotta raise your hands. You know, and it's like, okay, if I just come butt naked, what y'all got to do? So, right. You know, of course, I'm a gentleman, so I would never do it. I've entertained the thought. I would never do it. You know, but my thing is, at least when it's time to fly, can you please have some drawers to put on so that your bear, whatchamacallit, is not on the seat?
I love bear, whatchamacallit. That's my thing favorite.
What if she got the center seat? And I'm to her left. My thing is, so where am I supposed to put my hand in that? Where can I use my armrest? I can use my armrest because I'm at your waist level.
Oh my goodness.
So my thing is, the least you can do is put on some drawers, you know, or ask for an aisle seat. It's not going to be by the window and not have to touch. Anyway, clearly, you thought I was joking when I said the coronavirus is going to be going stir crazy, sit up in his house. That's all I do all day is read stories about people drinking liquor and flying butt naked.
Oh my goodness. Well, are you gonna tune in to the last episode of Little Fires Everywhere?
So this week, of course, the last episode came out. I have not watched it yet. You haven't watched it yet either.
I have not watched it.
And I think it'll be spicy. Yeah, I think I'm gonna watch it tonight. I'm gonna make a nice dinner for myself. I think I'm either gonna do I'm either going to do fried shrimp and french fries, or I'm going to make myself a nice chef salad with some deli meats and some cheeses and some fresh mozzarella cheese. I don't have decided yet.
That sounds yum. I'm making baked chicken tenders and fries. That's what I'm going to make tonight for the kids, even though I technically don't have kids, but I consider my two parents, me and Missy, call them senior toddlers, and so they are my kids because I cook for them all the time and every day, especially since the Rona. And then, of course, Denver will have his farmer's dog food for dinner.
You know what we forgot to do? You know what we neglected to do this month, Doc? Was talking about you and Missy's anniversary.
Oh, yeah.
Happy belated. How many years have you all been married? How many years have it been now?
It has been 4 years. Oh, my God.
Yeah, 4 years since you all have been married.
It's been 4 years. It's like, I can't remember. But, yeah, 4 years, and we've been together for 8 years. And it's still so much fun. Like what I was telling her the other day was this whole Rona experience and us being home together. Like she has kept me laughing, like stomach hurting, laughing, like in stitches. Like she is so naturally funny. She doesn't try to be funny, but the things that just come out of her mouth and that she says like crack me up. I mean, so she's
well, I love it. Yeah.
So Go ahead.
I'm gonna say there was this meme on Facebook that was talking about, like, you know how everybody be like, oh, I miss my boo. Like, the regular times, everybody's so in love. They're like, oh, y'all who's so in love. You got y'all stuck in the house with y'all boo. Y'all ain't quite as in love no more. So I'm glad that y'all are still getting along, yes.
No, we are. We're still getting along. I mean, of course, we're like, both of us are getting on each other's nerves and stuff like that. Like, last night I went downstairs to go get me a snack, you know, after midnight, okay, to go get, some snacks after midnight. And so Missy's like, make me a snack. And then I'm like, your snacks be so elaborate. It's always be like, pick a good pickle out of my pickle jar and then put it in a baggie and then put some slices on the side. It's like all this extra preparation where I just go grab a bag of candy or I'll just grab a cookie or those type of things. So my snacks be easy. And so she's like, grab me a, you know, this, that, and the third. And I said, your snacks be so complicated. She's like, my snacks don't be complicated. And something else say there, they stay complicated. So that's what I mean about her cracking me up. Like she cracks me up. Like she feels like, oh, I'm so low maintenance. And, you know.
No, let me tell you something. Let me tell you something. Quiet as this cat, Missy is hilarious.
Okay.
Missy, I love Missy. Missy is so hilarious. I wish I could tell our listeners all the stories of the time that Missy basically read me when I was about to hit the streets and go out to the club. Missy Shane is so good. And like between you and Missy, and like, oh my, we can't even tell these stories on the air. But just listeners, Kyla Shady, and she her wit has gotten better. Mystical is witty, and Mystical Shade, Mystical will cut you. You'd be like, what? Missy really is hilarious. And I'll tell you what, one of my favorite things to do when I come to your house, when Missy doesn't have to work or is not sleepy, especially like for New Year's or for a birthday, is to sit up and cut up with Missy. And we and Missy be cracking jokes. I be cracking jokes. And Missy takes forever to pick a movie on the TV. And Missy, the
Oh my God, it be taking hours. Don't it be taking hours, child? It be taking hours.
Yeah, one year out, you know, because like every maybe like twice a year, we'll do like a sleepover at your house, you know, for 2 or 3 days. And like we trying to watch a movie, and like I'll be in y'all's bedroom, and I'll be on the air mattress on the floor, you know. So Missy will pick a movie, but it literally takes like 2 hours. And then one time, it took Missy 2 hours to pick the damn movie, and she picked that one movie, and it was the worst movie. It was about the Killer Clowns. And I was like, Missy, did you really? I was so upset. But
oh my God, it was the worst ever.
It was the worst.
But no, I mean, needless to say, like, it's been great. It's been a hoot and a holler the whole time. I enjoy her so much. I feel like she was made just for me because, like, I'm really nuts. We did that couple challenge thing that's going on Facebook where you talk about how you met and who is the worst temper. And so it's like, why do I have all the worst traits? And it's no shade, but it's true. And so she really balances me out, and she's so loving to my parents, and
Y'all are the best. Well, I just love you both. I'm sorry for you both, and I miss you both, but I promise I'll come and see y'all soon. But as for now, we're out of time. We got to go. So Doc, say goodbye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Strange Fruit is produced by Louisville Public Media. Our engineer is Koja Tashiro, who also composed our theme music. For more information about Strange Fruit, visit strangefruitpod.org. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Strange Fruit Pod.
The views expressed on Strange Fruit do not reflect those of Louisville Public Media, its staff, or its underwriters. Strange Fruit is produced by me, Kyla Story.
And me, Jason Gardner.
Thanks for listening.
Support for LPM Podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.